The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jimmy, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime World Daily. I use the tone of my Canada because it's Canada Day today.
Oh, happy Canada Day.
Do you
happy Canada,
Canada
Day.
How you doing? How's your Canada Day going so far this early morning, Dubs? You're wearing a nice red shirt, I see.
I am. It's kind of my Pearl Jam tour / Canada Day shirt. Mm-hmm. That I tend to wear. We all have our faves. You've got yours on. I was thinking about how you packed, nice, James Sharman.
I bought you this had actually to have when I bought this Canada shirt in Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two birds,
yeah,
one stone. Organized.
So I'm wearing a hat and a t-shirt. I look very Canada.
You do. Mm.
There's some great gear out there, Dan Wong. There's some great gear out
I
there.
I told you what I'm doing. Purchase. I love, you know what a patriot I am, but I don't wear it like other people do. I am a quiet patriot. I stand on things that Canada stands for. And
stand
I'm
on
also,
guard for thee?
Yes. And I'm also fairly cheap. So let's be honest. Oh. I'm waiting for the sport check at Canadian Tire Sale. I'm getting some mentions up there. When the Canadian team finally falls in the semifinals of the World Cup. that is my prediction. And I will zip over to the local sport check and in the, you know, the Walmart bin. I don't know what kind of bin it is, but it's a bin at Sport Check where it'll say hats.
Has bins.
Hats, $4.99. T-shirts, $7.99. Right? That's what I'm going
to roll with. Maybe you're not giving enough credit to this movement and that these things are going to be retaining their value post-World Cup.
Oh, collector's items. Is that what you're saying?
No. Not even that. Like, they'll be just relevant still.
Oh.
Relevance, yes.
Right. You can't go out and buy a Canadian Olympic hockey jersey from the bargain bin right now, I'm assuming. Not that I've ever looked, but I'm assuming they're probably still keeping their value. You can get a McDavid Canada hockey jersey probably for $400 or whatever it costs.
Right.
Right. Let's hope that you can get a Fonzie Canada World Cup shirt for the lean mean $260 post World Cup. Let's hope that happens.
Well,
tell you what, we ranted a lot about the pricing of the jerseys, you know, and yeah, who's going to pay for them? Well, a lot of people, apparently.
A lot of people. That's it.
But the tickets, yes, too.
You know, because you're caught up in that wave where you want to be a part of it. And the best way that you know how to show your allegiance or your patriotism or, you know, that your support really is to wear a jersey on your back. And at that point, you're almost blinded by the fandom and you're willing to pony up the cash, right? Yeah. So you don't even think twice about the number.
Yeah.
I was also thinking this is an intimate Canada Day because people are, you know, we're working right now, but other people are working in other places. So there's only three of us on today, but we do have a guest coming on.
Mm-hmm, we do. We have Tom Harrington, CBC legend, coming on in about 20 minutes or so. Tom's always got a great perspective. Huge footy fan. Mm-hmm. Huge. Obviously
asking Canada about that penalty shootout, Sharms.
Yeah, also a Dutch fan. So we'll get Tom's take on the Netherlands. He ain't too happy. Let's put it that way. But don't you hate it when the marketing geniuses at Nike or Adidas or whatever prove us wrong and actually know what they're talking about when they price these things? You know? Or maybe it's FIFA.
We're not always right.
We're not
always right.
No,
funny problem.
No, in fairness, I think if I recoil the conversation, I'm pretty sure
recoil
is that not the right word?
Recall.
Oh my god! Remember, I just said to you before the show that I spent 2 minutes trying to find my glasses and I was wearing them.
Yeah.
Well, something's not right at the moment. Did I have a massive grand mal seizure while I was sleeping.
No, no. It's always a petit. You wouldn't be with us if it was a massive one. It's a petit mal, and you're smelling burnt toast in the kitchen.
No, it could have been a grand mal, though. Not a massive one, but a grand mal, I could be still like operating as if I was normal and not realizing.
It's possible. That's interesting. But where Wonger does his bargain shopping for like the reduced, you know, whether it's Halloween candy or the Canada Day stuff on July 2nd, he doesn't go to the Grand Mall. He goes to the Petit Mall.
Petit Mall.
Yeah.
Love the Petit Mall. It's great.
It's quaint. Quaint.
Oh, what a good one for Canada Day, Dubs. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm feeling good about it. Nobody's recoiling in horror.
That conversation, I think we said people will probably buy them anyway, but how can you charge that much? The average person can't afford that, and they can apparently. Anyway, today we have England against DR Congo. Now, if you're listening to this on SiriusXM, you have probably seen this and you know the results. So we won't speculate, but let's if it's not an England win, there's going to be a lot of commotion on the in the English fandom, to put it that way. That's obviously their big favorites in that one. Belgium against Senegal. That's really interesting. That should be a great match. It's USA.
Upset all over it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But then again, I thought Ecuador, Mexico could have upset all over it as well.
Yeah, same.
USA, Bosnia-Herzegovina. Could that have upset all over it?
If Bosnia frustrates them, because they're so good against the ball and they're so good on long throws, they're so good on set pieces. They've also got some wingers who can whip in some quality balls to Dzeko and to others who can punish. So it depends how long they can kind of keep the U.S. at bay. But yeah, potentially. But I mean, the U.S. has looked very good, right?
Really good.
Spectacular, actually. Like they've surprised, yeah. Have they surprised? I'm surprised.
No, I think it's understandable. They weren't great leading up to the World Cup. A lot of question marks around Mauricio Pochettino. They opted to play against these top nations in the build-up and didn't win many of them. You know, maybe won one or maybe drawn one. They were smashed by Belgium. Trying to find themselves. The selections weren't controversial as such, but there's some, you know, well-known absentees. But they hit the pitch flying from that Paraguay game onwards. They looked outstanding. So give them credit. But like you said, Bosnia-Herzegovina is a good team. We know that. Canada played them. How great would it be to see the States knocked out by Bosnia-Herzegovina, the team that Canada drew?
Thrilling, especially on Canada Day.
Can we talk about this a little bit? At the beginning of the World Cup, I said I was going to cheer for CONCACAF teams because it helps Canada. It helps our confederation grow and have more eyes on it and show that we are an elite confederation. And I'm having some real doubts about how I can cheer for the United States.
Good.
Yeah, because there shouldn't be any doubts. There shouldn't be any
Happy
any
Canada Day.
I say this from sitting in Houston and meeting lovely Americans every day because they are really funny down here. Just putting that in there. They're not all evil. But let's hope they get smashed today. It'd be amazing. And Dubs, who has numerous times in this very podcast recalled moments on the football pitch against the States, which has fueled her hatred for the United States from a sporting standpoint.
Let's not say hatred.
I have many good friends.
Distaste
and dislike and
always hate.
Root against. Right? It was like the Roman Abramovich Chelsea era. My favorite team was whoever Chelsea was playing. And thus today, I am feeling Bosnian. To steal a line from Infantino.
Right.
Even though, don't you find it, I mean, this is one of those weird things because I quite like a lot of the American players.
Yeah, no, same.
I really do, right? They're fun to watch. They're good interviews, got some personality about them, but it's the collective. As a Canadian, we cannot support them in any sporting endeavor.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wanted to shift the attitude and the approach to American fanaticism. And I thought maybe I could do it. I'm not sure yet. I'm going to have to play it by game time. It'll be because I think it's exceptional for a great World Cup, like everyone to enjoy this. And there's been so many political issues and, you know, from the Iranian team having issues playing in this World Cup, which it was kind of like you were uninvited, disinvited, not really shown an opportunity.
Cast aside,
and not shown an opportunity, given the opportunity, which you earned to play at your best. And, you know, when I see things like that from the government of the U.S., does that change how it affects, mm-hmm. you know, this is the Infantino struggle, right? How do I play with this government that the tournament was given 8 years ago, not knowing that the same government would still be in, right?
Isn't that crazy? Well, not
crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Not like, still being, but kind of went away for a bit and then came back.
He was longer streaking after when they got it, right? He was happy, happy-go-lucky, yeah. running through BMO, nude. He was happy. I don't know if we can still, if that connection is still, like, I'd love to talk to Tom about this. Does he feel like the new people coming in to watch Canada soccer have even recognized that this World Cup was full of intrusions on the political side from, you know, the AFCON referee, from Iran, from Iraq, from all of these countries who are said, Haiti, like, hey, your players aren't coming, your supporters aren't coming, your all of these things.
Vizinho's mom and others who couldn't get visas.
Yeah, it's crazy. But the play on the pitch, back to what Sharm's, you know, spoke about, didn't align himself with it, but he says it usually takes over. And I have to say, you know, Canada's run has made us be in a position to look back and go, oh, are we standing on merit here? Are we, you know, as far as do we let those other things slip aside because we're enjoying ourselves so much? Right?
Yeah. Are we part of the problem here?
Are we part of the problem?
Mm-hmm.
Like, should we, and I say we, but the greater football community, mm-hmm. not allow the football to take over? Or should sports and politics shouldn't mix, which is, sadly, it's nonsense because it always does.
Mm-hmm.
We've allowed it to kind of dissipate during this World Cup as we do every 4 years. Should we have made a point to quickly highlight these problems, Dubs.
Like we're doing right now.
Focused on, like we're doing right now.
Yes.
I think it's important to remember them, to, you know, to not just focus on what's on the pitch and pretend that those other issues don't exist or that they've gone away conveniently just for the month, right? I think it's easier for us as humans, and we do tend to do that. But I think what allows me to do it a little bit more is a lot of Canadians, I know Tom himself, I'll ask him about it, were reticent about giving dollars to the U.S., you know, tourism sector or to their economy and just avoiding kind of boycotting. I don't want to go to the U.S., right? Because it's your, like the tacit approval for what's happening by your mere presence. But to hear from some of our voyageurs and footy primers who made the trip, followed Canada down to L.A., they have had an experience that is in stark contrast to a lot of the things that we're hearing about the U.S. And yes, you're still in that soccer bubble, mm-hmm. but it's very much the United Nations of football, where everybody's getting along and friendly and supporting one another, you know, and being good sports, no vitriol, you know, none of the negativity that we're seeing. So that is refreshing for me to hear. And then maybe it's a little bit unexpected given the current political climate, but it gives me hope. If that doesn't sound too hokey.
No, 100% Dubs. And that's really important to focus on that football sport is demonstrating the goodness in the world, and that we shouldn't be defined by these moronic goblin leaders.
Mm.
Right. And we should probably take that 13, 15.
Clip that.
I think maybe for the first time I've used cock goblin.
Yeah.
1402. but you know what I mean? And I've seen it on social a lot, and it's a great point when people are saying, you know what, this is kind of proving to us that if not for these leaders, most people around the world generally get on with each other really well. If you left it to us, anarchy, it would be great. It would work. Anarchy doesn't work, just to be clear there. But this, people aren't listening to me. I won't speak to you. You can agree or not. They don't listen to me for political opinion, because what the hell do I know about? But I've got a little bit of know-how about soccer, right? Or at least I've got opinions, right? And I can ask questions to the experts. That's what people, if people are listening to me for whatever reason, it's for sport. It's not for politics. Therefore, during the World Cup, I don't feel inclined to talk about politics, even outside World Cups, because that's not really my job. If there's journalists out there, and there are some who want to focus on that during the World Cup, go for it. Fill your shoes, right? But right now, it's like, do you want me to give a breakdown of American politics and how it affects the average American and North American and world citizen during a World Cup? What do I know? Nothing.
No, but it's everything you're saying makes sense. It's just, it's funny because you find yourself in a conflict of interest, right? If you're being fair about the concept of fairness and justice on the pitch, after the pitch, training, all that, then you're like, oh, so this team wasn't treated the same. And then as soon as one team isn't treated the same, you're like, well, how many other teams weren't treated the same that we don't know about? They're not complaining about. They, you know, all of these things, they weren't allowed to bring their support team. And support team, as Dubs and Craig and Jimmy have said, are so integral for winning, right? Like for success. And so when there's this opportunity that happens every 4 years, I think that there's sometimes we lose ourselves in this, but we also, and this is the conflict of interest, we want soccer to grow. We want football to be a universal sport that everyone can play. And we're seeing it to what Dubs was mentioning, you know, Claudio and DDC and everybody else who made it down to LA said, what an experience. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, Jimmy going to the Portugal-Croatia game tomorrow night is going to be an experience that certain people are going to walk away and say, oh, the whole world is here and this is tremendous. And I think those are these opportunities we have to build on, but we do have to remember that this overall has been a very hectic, chaotic World Cup to start. And it's only because of the great play on the pitch, the Canadian run for us, that we were able to speak more about what's going on in the tournament than what's going over on the other side.
I wonder, though, at the end of this tournament, though, from a player perspective and the union and advocacy, if I was a player on the Canadian men's national team, I would be looking at the experience of the Iranian players and saying, this is not okay. Right? Like everyone should be treated equally. And so I'm sure we're going to hear from FIFA Pro.
Oh, no, absolutely. But I can't think of a Canadian player, though, that would be comfortable standing up and commenting on that, really. I'm just trying to think. I'm not saying they shouldn't. And I'm not saying other players
won't. You don't have to do it publicly.
As a collective under FIFA. No, right. So as a collective under FIFA Pro, you think they'll do it? I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's get those full stories, because Iran was screwed over.
Yes.
From a footballing standpoint in this tournament, there's no doubt about it. And that's no comment on what's happening over there right now, from the regime to the Strait of Hormuz. It's nothing. It's just from a purely footballing standpoint. It wasn't equal ground.
No. Yeah.
And it should be.
Absolutely.
But I think the fan stories are great. Sorry, Dubs, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, bringing it back to my pettiness, being Canada Day and the clash between Bosnia and the U.S.
Oh, yeah. We started there, didn't we?
From a footballing standpoint, though, it's a stylistic clash, right? You've got a team 4-4-2 in Bosnia. They're going to be belligerent. They're going to be organized. They're going to be vertical and direct. And then the U.S., they're playing a 3-5-2. They're going to have an extra midfielder. They're going to have more of the ball, and they're going to like that. Mm-hmm. But Bosnia have shown they're tough to play against. If they can dig in and they can go to the distance, they're excellent at penalties. We know how they came out of UEFA. Like Pochettino's side, like they've been worn by the likes of Wales. And this is an opponent that are extremely resilient. They do not give up. This is their first time in a round of 32, right? Bosnia, and led by Dzeko, whose tenure with the national team is longer than his current country's iteration, right?
Which is that's amazing.
Crazy. So, and like the wingers, like in Serginho Dest and Anthony Robinson, like they're going to have, if Bosnia are able to break effectively, they're going to have more defensive responsibility and there will be spaces to exploit because the U.S. do play an open, expansive style. So I'm Dini Petty. Do you guys remember Dini Petty? Did you watch Dini Petty on Canadian TV? Today, I am Dini Petty. I'm being very petty about soccer and about U.S.-Canada relations.
Today, she's being Dini Petty.
just for a change. Wow. So, yeah, I would love to see Bosnia frustrate the U.S. and frustrate Pochettino.
So if anybody's watching this or listening to this, please Google Dini Petty. She was a talk show host in the mid-90s, maybe late 80s. She came in on CTV. And actually, I played, she was in a series on her show.
Was she at the FIFA draw?
No, this is a small world.
On the team bus, actually.
Dave Amber and I were extras.
He thought she was Marilyn Dennis.
No, Dave Amber and I were extras in 1994, 93, 94. And they were used, there was a show called ENG, and they were using the Dini Petty show within the actual ENG show, and Dave and I were playing cameramen. So there's a shout out to Dini Petty.
Wow, look at that.
Yes. Lots of shout outs there. Yeah.
You know, I mentioned Marilyn Dennis. She actually went away from the microphone this past week.
I thought you said she was going to. Where were you going with this?
What do you think I said?
I thought you were going to drop.
She finally dropped.
Oh, dropped. No. Because it's not a retirement. It's not a retirement, but after 40 years,
right?
I forget what station it is now. She's said farewell. Adam Wilde, her son, who does fantastic hockey work, by the way.
Oh, it's Chum, right? I think it was 104.5. Yeah.
Well, you know, I bet our mate Tom Harrington knows.
Of course he does.
Hey, Tom.
Hi, guys. Marilyn, how's it going?
Marilyn Dennis, your paths must have crossed at some point.
You know what? No.
Oh.
Okay, Tom, so, it's been fun. See you later.
Not to put too fine a point on it. Even though we were working in Toronto, I was working in different streams. I was in sports for a really long time. Then I was, you know, Marketplace and radio and all that. So, you know, unless you're at a news conference or an event that she might be at and other people in the media, you really don't run across people as often as other people think, actually. Even the listeners or viewers think, oh, you guys must hang out all the time. One of the first things I remember learning about listeners and viewers of CBC is they think we all kind of hang out, you know, it's like, I'll go to Mansbridge's house for a poker game or I go to Hannah Mansing's place and mow the lawn, that sort of stuff. So we don't. I mean, we, you know, there are occasions, launch parties, that sort of thing, where everybody gets together and chats, but that's ordinarily once or twice a year. When I was at Marketplace, for example, there'd be a big launch for the season and all the CBC shows, comedy, and, you know, everybody from Mercer to Mansbridge were there. And that's fun. There's lots to chatter, but you're actually there mostly to talk to the media about the upcoming season, that kind of thing. So you don't normally mix with outside CBC personalities that often, unless like it's a charity event, that kind of thing. So, but I mean, anybody speaking personally, anybody who can last more than 40 years in this business deserves a lot of admiration because it's tough. Yeah. It's a grind. Yeah.
Charms, you're going on 40 years, aren't you?
Well, yeah, but I'm not the same company, though. That's the whole point.
Count the rings, yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, Tom, we're just talking about Germany this World Cup and how all the political noise has kind of gone away. Mm. And is it our responsibility as sports broadcasters to keep a lens on those issues, or can we just focus on the sport itself? What are your thoughts on that, having covered both?
It's in the context of Germany versus in what context? Just, are we talking about like post-war Germany? Really?
No.
What I think is interesting about the German story is I have a very good friend actually who lives in Hamburg, and we're always chatting. He's not perfect. He's a Liverpool fan as well, but we've been talking for years. Yeah, he and I chat all the time about football, and he's been telling me a lot about the reaction in Germany to the loss by the Germans. And the consensus was going into the tournament, you guys probably know this already, that the Germans weren't very good. And they've been the German Federation rides in reputation a lot, but they've done nothing since 2014, really, since they won the World Cup, and they've bowed out of the European Championships, and now they're out of three World Cups in a row. And Nagelsmann is probably out. I mean, he's offered to stay, but I think the sense my friend is telling me is that the Germans want him out. This guy personally thinks he's overrated. But beyond that, I kind of liken what Germany is going through now to what Italy was going through the last 5 to 10 years, and what hockey did in Canada post 98 after we lost the shootout in Nagano and we weren't winning World Juniors and the whole country went this, you know, soul searching, what's wrong with our game kind of deal. The sounds to me is that the Germans are about to do that, and they're going to take a deep dive into their programs. I mean, they have a great system, they produce great players, but not enough great players, at least not anymore. So I think that's a really fascinating part of the early sort of bowouts of, like, including my Netherlands. I'm wearing, by the way, red and white for Canada Day and Ajax for my friend Johan Cruyff. But I think, you know, those two countries in particular, I mean, I do think, you know, on the Dutch story, you know, I have a lot of issues with Ronald Koeman and what he did, even leading up to the tournament. But the changing of the guard, I think, is the overriding big story of this World Cup so far. The world is changing. How it's really a World Cup, that everybody's from other places playing for different countries, and which I think is fascinating, actually, and has created a kind of a balance of power. And what I think is happening is we're not hearing that reflected a lot in the commentary. There's still people clinging to the old powers, that, you know, the way things used to be. That's gone. And there are times where I don't think people are very informed, even, like, about particularly the African teams. You hear the commentary during a game, and the commentators often talk way more about the European clubs or the South American clubs, and little about the African or even the Asian countries. So the media community writ large in football, soccer, and not just North America, but in the West, needs to do a much better job of getting in there and finding out what's going on with these federations and what they're doing in places like in different parts of Africa to produce so many good teams and such a great product. I think that's one of the single biggest theme for me of this World Cup.
Well, that's a great segue to the Netherlands, your Netherlands, mm-hmm. and how, you know, the world's crumbling at the foundations, apparently, but they lost to a Moroccan team that might win this World Cup.
Yeah.
And you talk about traditional powers. Yeah, they're not a traditional power. But if you followed Morocco since 2022, even before then, when they were still a very good team, this is no fluke. And I feel for the Dutch, because they came against a powerhouse. If you put Brazil in Morocco's place, it'd be, okay, lost to Brazil, right? Morocco is very much on par with Brazil right now, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Maybe even better, actually.
I think they're better. I think they beat Brazil right now. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they beat them as well. Yeah, 100%. So if you're a Dutch fan, as you are, you know, when you're not a Canadian fan, how do you feel? Do you say, you know, that was just a really crappy draw that we faced, and now we put a lens on perhaps how the world has emerged, you know, under the umbrella of Moroccan football now?
Well, there's a lot of feelings about it. I think initially when the draw sort of played out the way it did, I'm thinking, really, so one very good team is going to go home right away. And the fact that, like, Belgium is playing today and like, they've had not a very good tournament. Several teams have had tournaments not as good as either the Dutch or the Moroccans. So I was kind of frustrated that this was more like a round of 16 game, not a round of 32 game, at least, right? The Morocco-Netherlands game. So that was part of it. But, hey, you know, life happens. What I did feel was, going into the game, I was much more nervous about this than other Dutch fans were. I thought there was a very good chance they'd lose. I think Morocco was really highly skilled. They've got incredible players. It's just they don't get a lot of attention. That's typical, right? And as I said, with Western media coverage, who talks about Morocco? Well, Hakimi, he's phenomenal. There's a whole bunch of guys that are really, really good. I wish they were, and frankly, I read that seven of the players in Morocco were born in the Netherlands. But there are eight Moroccans born in Morocco and then seven Dutch born players. But so I was going into that game very nervous. I wasn't sure they were going to win. And when I saw the setup by Koeman for the game, I was even more worried because it was completely went against everything he'd done in the tournament. It was against everything that Dutch football has represented for a long time. He was playing for penalties at kickoff. It struck me like it was. I was like, "What the hell are we doing?" And it was a pretty good performance in the stage, winning the group and annihilating Sweden, and you know, showing the side. Brobby was like a revelation up front. They haven't had a player like that in a long time. All these sort of things were at play. But then when I saw them play Morocco, I go, "Oh man, really? Of all teams, we have to play these guys?" Because the way they set up, it's a really good in the basketball term a matchup for. It's not a good matchup for Holland. So I was a bit concerned. And when Gakpo scored, I was like, "What?" Because I mean, at that point, the run of play was all Morocco. There was one-way traffic at points. I mean, the possession wasn't overwhelming, but Morocco was far more dangerous in possession than the Netherlands were. And the Dutch seemed to be kind of out of ideas, and I think they're really confused. I thought that, Frenkie de Jong said this after the fact. He said, you know, we played what the coach told us to play, but basically I was really confused and didn't know what I was doing. It looked like that. Wow. Yeah. You had the sense that every time the Dutch got the ball, it wasn't really leading to anything. You felt that nothing was going to happen. It's like that watching other sports. You know, you're watching a hockey game and like one team is just not in it. That's another wasted opportunity. Whereas every time Morocco seemed to get the ball, they made something happen. And I mean, Verbruggen was the best player for Holland by a mile. I mean, the save he made in the first half of extra time was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It was like the Emi Martinez save in the World Cup final, like that. It saved them then. So I wasn't as optimistic. What I liked about the Dutch team going in was there was no drama, which has been traditionally the Achilles heel of the club. There's always locker room drama between players. There was none of that. There seemed to be a really good chemistry within the side, which was a big leap forward in my view. And in terms of overall talent, I mean, I thought the midfield, like Reinders, is a good player, but he didn't play and he didn't even take a penalty. Like what? Mm-hmm. And Memphis Depay didn't take a penalty. What? I was standing there watching the penalties going, why are we putting these guys out to kick? You know, I'm not saying they deserve to even get to a penalty, but once they're in it, you want to put five guys out there you think can score. And they had, you know, Kluivert, who was a great player with Bournemouth, but like maybe it was too much for him. The other kid whose name I forgot, it was like would never been in a World Cup game and he missed the net. You know, just things like that. So all in all, and now Koeman's gone, as I fully expected he would be. By the way, Professor Segway, did you see the news conference after the game? Have you seen that in Dutch?
No.
Oh, I should send that to guys. So Koeman's sitting there kind of composing himself and having been knocked out of the World Cup, the earliest exit in history. And this German, clearly a veteran Dutch journalist, basically says to him, so are you resigning now? And he's thinking, well, no, I have time to think about it. I said, well, why aren't you resigning now? Anybody else would. But it was incredible. I'm standing there going, oh, my God. And Koeman, to his credit, kind of kept himself together and didn't lash out. Other guys would have got up and walked away. Yeah. But it was classic Dutch, right? In your face. But there was this feeling, even around the team, that he wasn't the right guy. He never really worked out in Barcelona. And in his time leading the Dutch, the stat was against top 25 teams. They have six draws and eight defeats and no wins. So, you know, that should be an alarm bell that maybe mm-hmm. this wasn't going to be going well. So there may have been a bit of mirage in the group matches, that maybe there was a bit of an illusion that they weren't as good as they're not as good as they looked. So either way, they're in a position now where they have to do a bit of soul searching. There's also rumors that, believe it or not, Arne Slot has been approached. But anyway, yeah, that's just out there. But there's lots of, as you know, lots of junk on the.
Now you're just name dropping, Tom. Yeah. Get these two all enticed with the Arne Slot.
That's not a bad
job. We already did with your Cruyff drop.
Yeah.
Casually mentioned my friend, Johan Cruyff.
Yeah, I wish. I mean that on the friend.
Yeah, no, I wanted to ask you, is there two different Tom Harringtons for a Canada match versus a Holland match? How are they different? Are they the same? Is it the same or is it as critical? Is it as cynical? Is it as euphoric? tell me, God, those were all pretty good words for one.
Yeah. Well, multiple syllables.
You just killed it by acknowledging it, though.
I know, but that's what I do. That's what I do, Dubs. I kill it by acknowledging it. But are you a different Tom Harrington for the two different fandoms?
That's a good question. I don't know that. I think because my cheering for Canada skills are relatively new, because this is all a new experience for all of us, having Canadian men taking on the world and doing so well, whereas I've been following the Dutch for over 50 years and watching them, you know, lose penalty kicks and all the rest of it in three World Cup finals. So it's more of a sense with Canada. With Holland, it's a sense of dread. Canada's a sense of wonder. So
that's England to me. That's a great way of putting it.
I find it sort of ironic. Actually, I was thinking this today, that on Canada Day the Americans are playing, and on Independence Day the Canadians are playing. But
yeah,
I think so. On Saturday when they play against Morocco, I'm going to be as proud and cheery as I could ever be, and particularly now that I don't cover sports anymore. I've had a big lease on life when I left covering sports, because now I can express my biases. I was at the World Cup.
You mean final you shouldn't do that when you're in the media?
Well, I was at the World Cup final in South Africa in 2010. I was at the final. I was in the stadium when Holland played Spain. And the first time I'd ever seen the Dutch play live was in the World Cup final. And of course, as we know, they lost and they could have won. But I was sort of had my reporter hat on, and I wasn't cheering or anything else. I just, you know, was taking notes and watching the game and all that. So I processed it a few days after the defeat. Now I don't have to worry about that anymore. So I can openly cheer for Holland. And a lot of people follow me online know that I'm a Dutch fan. So they're saying, what happens if they play Canada? And I say, they have to beat Morocco first. So I'm not going to get my hopes up. But I think to your point, Danny, I think it's a different feeling, I would say, because I have this long history with the Dutch. And also being a Dutch fan feels a bit like being on an island when you live in this part of the world. Most people are Brazil and Portugal and Italy and Germany, that sort of thing. The Dutch are kind of down there in terms of people even ask me, why the Dutch, for crying out loud, you know? So that there's a long history of watching them and having great moments and not so great moments. Canada's so new, you know. Paul James is a friend of mine, and he was on the 86 team in Mexico. And we used to talk about that experience and how kind of was this flash, literally a flash, in Canadian soccer. So they came out of nowhere, made it, you know, didn't score a goal, went home, that was it. And then we were in the wilderness for 30 years. So he said the passion for the country had then is nothing like it is now, you know, for lots of reasons. The interest in soccer was very different in 1986 than it is now. But what I love, and I think we talked about this when I appeared in your podcast recently, is this idea of the world seeing us, you know, into the game, seeing our marches to stadiums like they do in Europe and South America, that sort of thing. Millions watching on big screen TVs and parties, and the people going, Canada likes this game, and we do. And that's really fun. So I think on Saturday I'll be cheering like everybody else. I think what the Canadians have done is extraordinary, you know, and it's and they've shown themselves to be really good guys, good people. The sportsmanship's been really impressive, and that's another sort of theme that I've been thinking about too during the World Cup, is the humanity that I've seen throughout the tournament in a lot of different ways. And it reminds people who don't follow the game what it means to the world and how it's shared. And the experience of loss and victory is a shared experience. I went to the pub on Sunday to watch the Canada game because I didn't want to sit at home. I said, this is going to be a national memory one way or the other. And I don't want to sit in my basement and watch it alone on television. I want to be with other people and watch it with all those people. And I'm glad I did.
Tom, do you think that the Kone injury was a microcosm of that humanity? Because the maturity that he's shown, and also the empathy for Madibo, and there's no hatred, there's no resentment or bitterness, and the way that he's navigated that, and obviously we saw him dancing in the locker room, and a lot of people were concerned about that double lower leg fracture, right?
Yeah. But
just the way that he's conducted himself, I think, is emblematic of this team and the way that they've brought everybody in.
I think you're right. And I think in addition to that is Saliba holding the jersey up after he scored the goal, and then Canadians wearing number 8 to the next game, right? That is a really good example. There's so many of that kind of sense of humanity and you know, supporting one another in this. Yeah, we are playing for our country, but we love the game, and we're, you know, when the game is over, we're still friends. And the scenes, like, I don't know if you saw Matias Cunha with the Japanese player after the Brazil game yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, and ironically, at the same time outside the stadium, the exact same scene was playing out with a Japanese fan and Brazilian fans. The Japanese fan was crying and all the Brazilian fans surrounded him and hugged him and stuff like that. That was happening at the same time as Cunha was doing that. Mm-hmm. Cody Gakpo scored the other night, his wife having had a miscarriage and the players surrounding, starts crying before celebrating, you know, and everybody's applauding. And those sort of, like, that's where, and then even Mbappe, the first thing he did after he scored was run over to Deschamps, who had lost his mother, mm-hmm. I believe.
They're wearing armbands finally too. The French finally got the approval from FIFA, who originally declined. No, you can't wear armbands to memorialize your coach's mother who died. Like, come on.
I know, it's FIFA, Jane. You know? Yeah. But anyway, so there's all those things. You're right, Amy, that kind of stuff. I mean, there's been other things going on away from the game that haven't always been good, but overwhelmingly, like the reaction of the Tartan Army and the Orange Army in Dallas and those displays of affection and the response from the Americans to it, what is this, you know, mm-hmm. has been a really good, really nice side story. This humanity at the World Cup has been just tremendous. And again, it speaks to what I've always said about the sport. When for people who didn't understand it, it says, like, this is just not any other sport. It's not like hockey. It's not like baseball or American football. This is the world's game. Everybody shares in it. Everybody gets it. Everybody appreciates how difficult it is. And I find myself engaged in lots of conversations online during the tournament, and people are going, well, you know, how come, you know, it's so boring. I said, you know what? The other day, the Americans in the game against Paraguay scored a goal after 27 passes. Right. And there was like the famous Cabiazo goal in 2006, where the Argentina scored it with 25 passes or whatever. Right. So if you're watching the game, you're saying, there's really nothing going on. Then the ball's in the net. Mm-hmm. So you have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. Football requires you to drill in. My favorite analogy for football is jazz. It's like it's a structured environment full of individual creativity and moments that are unique. Solos, whatever, right? Jazz is like that. Jazz hands. So I think football's like jazz, and some people don't get jazz, right? I understand. And you don't have to love football, but just don't denigrate it on the surface because it was a nil-nil score or the guys roll around on the ground. Nobody likes that. But there's becoming, I'm noticing a bit of less than that because they're kicking guys off the field. They're starting to crack down on that stuff. That's what they have to do. But getting back to the humanity aspect and getting back to like Ismail Kone's story and just how, as Amy said, how just a lovely guy he seems to be. And he exudes this kind of love for the country and love for his teammates. And I think, honestly, on Saturday, I mean, it's going to be a real challenge, but the bond that these players have, that can carry guys and make them do things that they may not think they could do otherwise.
Yeah.
Wunger?
Yeah, actually, JC said he can come in and do the our little lineup thing that we're doing.
It's the World Cup Watch Canada.
Jazz hands.
Brought to you by Tim Hortons. Is there anything more Canadian than that? Back to you, Tom.
Well, that's good, very fitting on July the 1st, in fact, as well. One little Kone story I heard through the grapevine, but it came from actually someone who would know to demonstrate his character. So, you know, he grew up in Montreal, in not a very affluent part of Montreal, in this building where his mother came over. And when he became successful, he said, "Mom, I can buy you a house. You know, let's move." And his mom said, "No, listen, this is my family. My family live in this building. I don't want to move," even though she could. So he bought the building.
What? Really?
Yeah, that's what I got it from a pretty high, someone that would know. Let's put it that way. And just shows what kind of guy this guy is.
Yeah.
Right? He's you know, promised David before the World Cup, we called him a gem, right? And this diamond that we have, this personality. Yes. I didn't know that quite as much about Ismail Kone until the build-up. I saw some interviews with him. I was Faisal Kamisa, Sportsnet, interviewed him before the World Cup, back in, I think, maybe January, maybe. It's a great interview. And I saw a side to Ismail Kone that I didn't know existed. And he's been pushing ever since. Whenever you see him speak or see him with his teammates, he is something pretty special, man. Talk about a redemption arc after what we thought we knew about him at Marseille. Oh, he's tough to coach. Well, I don't think he is. Jesse Marsh loves this kid and has taken him under his arm, which makes this whole injury even more tragic.
I know. Yeah. Well, he was my pick for the player to watch for the tournament. And
Same, Tom.
Yeah, and it's really, really sad what happened. But speaking of that, you know, and since you raised Marsh, I'm curious what you guys have been thinking since the tournament. So, you know, he gets a lot of stick from the media, particularly the American media and the football media, as performative, right? So mm-hmm. he doing things that for the sake of looking good and all that. He strikes me actually as a guy I'd want to play for. He's open with his emotions and feelings. He expresses pride and protects his players. He takes the heat for them, and I just think he's getting a bit of a bum rap. I think he's done an extraordinary job in leading this Canadian team, and the players certainly don't. I mean, we'd be hearing something, I think, at this point if they didn't like him.
Yeah,
you know, and so that's not an issue, and they seem to be ready to run through a wall for the guy. So I like what he's done, and I like his presence. I'd take him over a Ronald freaking Koeman any day of the week.
Hey, yeah, Dubs, would you want to play for him? Dubs, I mean, you 100 caps of Canada. Would you have loved to play for a Jesse Marsh type character?
Yes, 100%. I think for all the reasons that Tom just listed off there, I don't really have much more to add. And I saw somebody in our comments the other day that said to use performative as a word, as a descriptor for Jesse Marsh, is performative in itself. Is it?
There's lots of people out there who didn't know what that word meant until about 2 years ago.
Frantically. Yeah. Like,
showboat, like the other one. You know?
Jazz hands, jazz hands.
Yeah, and like even... You know, after that win versus South Africa, where they had to gut it out, they had to show character, they had to show grit, which is, I think, taking them back to that identity, even though we haven't really fully seen Marsh ball, like the high tempo, the aggression, that high-flying style, we haven't really seen it in like 100% in action this tournament. And you certainly can't do that versus a Morocco, but you can do it in different ways. I thought Jesse Marsh, he was on American soil, and I was asked this question as part of media, and I'm sure he was as well, whether, you know, like one-on-one or on the dais at a presser, like what it meant for him to be an American coaching Canada and you're back in the U.S. after you started the World Cup in Canada. And then this Jesse Marsh after the game wearing, like he's gone from a suit guy on the touchline to back to the tracksuit guy, right? And even more relaxed versus South Africa with kind of like a half zip. And he's wearing a gray one with the Canadian crest on it. And then he's kissing it rather performatively.
Yeah.
But I love it because it's like, look at me. I will take all the heat, both positive and negative. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's done. Like the media in the US are like falling over themselves to shake their fists at him and to criticize him.
Yeah.
And I just think that is the plan, or that was the plan all along, so that none of this pressure, or there's some pressure, there's always going to be pressure, especially because they're at a point now in the World Cup that they've never been before. So that's inherent. But the outside noise, there's very little of it because it's all directed at Jesse Marsh.
Yeah, I think I find his speaking with the American media, he was asked, I think, after the one of the games about if he had any kind of advice, I think, to the Americans or something or for their game.
Yeah, for Bosnia. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And he kind of blew them off. He said, well, I don't give a crap about the United. What am I? I'm coaching Canada. Why should I care? And like they were, oh, what? Oh, my goodness. You know, give me a break.
How it's dare
like,
you?
Yeah. You know, so that's the kind of a nice like little twist of the screw, if you will, turn the screw with Marsh, is he is an American and a proud American who lives in Italy, but coaches Canada. And people at the time, I remember when he was hired, I liked the hire when he was chosen myself, but there are a lot of people who didn't. But
Craig Forrest.
Oh, yeah? You're okay.
He came around.
He did.
Because what happened in Leeds, I think people were kind of looking at him over there. Because he was also performative at Leeds. If you watch Premier League games when Leeds were playing and he was managing, you know, he was kind of, you know, all over the place. But I thought, you know, in a way, that's kind of what we needed, was this kind of, to Amy's point, about a guy who could be a lightning rod, which is not necessarily a bad thing, and to sort of navigate really rough waters, because in order to get the program turned around, it was going to be bad at the beginning, and it was. And you need a guy who's going to be a cheery face or in your face to say, wait for it. We have a project. You'll see. And people, you know, are impatient in the world of sports. And we've seen he's delivered. And nothing could be, you cannot take away anything else, whatever you want to, however you want to criticize his personal style, that he's gotten results. And that's that shouldn't count for a lot.
I think it's a progression too, because we need a personality, like you say there, but John Herdman was a personality as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he loved the camera, just as Jesse does. But this is just the evolution. And the next, you know, John took the team as far as he could. Maybe he took the brand as far as he could as well. And from where he took over, it was an enormous leap for Canadian soccer.
Sure.
And now Jesse takes over, and it's like, you know, I said before, it's like John Herdman on steroids. And who is it for this? Well, that's scary because John Herdman was on steroids as well. You know, he's crazy. This kind of this larger than life personality almost, right?
Right.
So I think it's a really positive thing.
Hey, what happened to him, by the way?
Indonesia. He's coaching Indonesia national team.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. He'll probably do very well there. He'll get that whole system sorted out, I'm sure. You have a comment there.
Yeah, I wanted to just talk about the Alphonso Davies situation as a decoy, and people have been mentioning it, and I thought it'd be a great subject to talk about just because he isn't okay, at least not 100%. We haven't seen. So this is from at Knitting All Night 4018. Yeah, Knitting All Night. Sorry. Schaffelberg put the winning goal in play. Everyone knows now that Davies is not optimal. He will not give the next opponent a moment to worry. I'm wondering if that's true. So, Amy, I was just sitting there going, they now know he didn't show his 100%. We talked about it on last show that he literally was like he attracted players over to his side that opened up laneways for everybody else. But if Morocco's playing against Alphonso Davies, do they have to worry about 100% Alphonso Davies?
No, they saw that. That was like our ace up the sleeve. And then you saw the deference. You saw the respect that the South Africans gave to Alphonso Davies. He struck the fear in his opponent's eyes. And I think now that that's done, unless he was holding back. I talked about this last pod. So I'd like to hear Tom on it and his take. Like, do you think that Davies, he looks to me, Tom, like he's maybe 70%. That he, you know, he couldn't run full tilt. He couldn't really put it into gear, was maybe a little bit reticent or hesitant to do so. So do you think Morocco is even concerned a little bit about Alphonso Davies?
That's a tough one. I agree with you that I think when he came in, he changed the game because he just by presence, Morocco, or the South Africans got really nervous and started overcompensating and shifting more bodies towards him, and which opened up space for other players and led to the goal eventually.
Yeah.
So, and I think people need to, you know, considering how long it's been since he played, and he played, what 15, 20 minutes, maybe, I think something like that.
15,
I don't think, I can't draw a lot from based on that. I'm not as knowledgeable as a lot of people here are, but to me, that 20 minutes of Alphonso Davies doesn't tell me a whole lot yet about his ability to play a full 90. I don't think he can play a full 90. Would he start on Saturday? Probably not. Will he play? Yes. Will he play more? Yes. It also depends on the state of the game, if they're down like 2 or 3 nil. But I think he's just by being around the team, I think it helps. And I think the players are also, they're playing for Ismail Kone. They're also playing for Fonzie in a way too, you know, because they know how important he is to the team and how he wishes he could play. And I'll be curious to find out how much Byron's been involved in all this, by the way, when this is over. I suspect Byron's been on the phone every freaking day with the Canadian people talking about him and managing him, maybe more than any other player in any other team in this tournament. And because they have a big investment in him and he's young and they don't want to damage that. But Canada doesn't want to damage him either. Like, so Marsh doesn't want to be known as the guy who ruined his career. And they've already gotten in crap for how they handled him the last time, handled his injury in the past. So I don't know that. Well, I think people should also take something from the fact that without him, they've gotten this far. And without Kone, they've gotten this far. So there is depth.
Remarkable,
that they
really
didn't have.
It's remarkable what they have. I want to mention quickly this the whole, you know, how does Fonzie get used? Don't forget Hakimi knows all about Alphonso Davies from the Champions League this year.
Right.
And Fonzie looked okay against him before the injury, but Hakimi won't have any fear because Hakimi's played against the greatest, the best.
Yeah.
And this is not Fonzie at his very best. Yeah. So that might be an ace up the sleeve that Canada had against South Africa that just won't have the same boomf against a Moroccan team.
And I had a bit of a hot take on Marsh and Davies the other day, which I've got some pushback on it, but I was commiserating with my footy friends, the guys I travel with, about we've been chatting throughout the tournament, and we were talking about the decision, the comment by Marsh that Davies was ready to play and available when he wasn't. And they basically said it was calling it a decoy. Well, I call that a lie. And I think the problem, and people say, oh, they do it all the time in sports. Actually, they don't. In hockey, you have to list your injured players all the time. The NFL, you have to put out 2 days before a game which are injured players, who's available, who's not available. You can't go off and say player X is, you know, Patrick Mahomes is going to play. Actually, not. I hate to say it, but there are betting markets involved, things like that. I mean, are you putting out basically false information before a game? I have a real problem with that, ethically.
Oh, so it bothered you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but Marsh never said he was going to play. He said he would be available.
Okay.
Well, that's different.
That's splitting hairs to me.
Semantics.
Yeah.
No, I mean, to me, it's not, though. To me, it's like, this guy, if we need him, he's going to play. Now, whether he's lying or not, you know, perhaps. But him to say he's available to play is very different to saying he's going to play.
Except he did say, though, that when the Swiss talked about Davis' availability, it worked. So to me, that means that it wasn't just he's available to play. It was very intentional to, you can call it a decoy. I thought it was not being forthright. And I personally, I just think that was wrong. Because in sports, no matter professional or otherwise, the health of players has an impact on lots of different things. Obviously the outcome of the game, but in other, it has knock-on effects. I'm not a betting guy, but I'm just saying, and I think just ethically saying A when you don't mean it, I have a problem with that. I mean, I think I knew what he was doing. Not a lot of people agree with me on this, but I just felt it was, I didn't like that part of it. I think there was a valid point. You know, it's a ruse, but it's beyond that to me.
We actually have a great new product in our shop on wearefootyprime.com. It's a t-shirt with
Jason. Oh, I thought you were talking the pie shop.
Oh, no. That's also great as well. And that should be a link on wearefootyprime.
Yes, it should be
a discount. Actually, there's a discount for our listeners. I forget what the code is, though.
I got you off track. I got you off track.
Anyway, sorry, it's a t-shirt with a decoy duck and number 19 on it. I don't think it breaks any trademarks or copyrights.
So good.
We'll find out. I don't think Fonzie owns the number 19, so I think we're okay.
Nor the name there Alfonso, TM.
Yeah. Alfonso Decoy, we call it. So it's available right now on our Footy Prime shop on wearefootyprime.com. Tom, thank you so much, mate. Really enjoyed this as always. Keep enjoying the tournament. You have one team left at least.
And I do. Like the rest of you. Yeah, no, I'm pulling for Canada. You know what? I think it's going to be. I don't think they're going to win. No offense, but I think it's going to be a much better game than people think.
Fantastic. That is Tom Harrington, the legend, CBC legend of.
Happy Canada Day, guys.
Happy Canada Day.
All right. So. We haven't even spoken about yesterday's games. I mean, this has been a fun show. We've gone all sorts of directions here. Mm-hmm. But very quickly, we'll just focus on the France game because France just look handing the trophy at this point. I mean, that's always dangerous to say at this point. But that front four is, I know there's an article, I think, in The Athletic. I haven't had a chance to read it just yet, but is it the greatest attack we've ever seen at a World Cup? Mm. Let's just settle down a little bit. There's been some great World Cup attacks, but it's special. Mbappe pulls even with Leo Messi. So much for my imploding team narrative before the World Cup with France. They seem to be really tight. We saw that with the armbands. We saw it with the hugs at the end with their manager, Dubs. They're just so much fun to watch.
Yeah, and just unrelenting, just quality and going at teams. Like, they look like they can't be stopped at this point. And like, I would argue that the front four could stand against any other front four, like historically, like that's, and they've got players on the bench, right? And we talked about France. The only thing stopping France would maybe be France with the egos and managing that. And you're not starting and Barcola, you're going to go up here on the wing and then Doué, you're on the bench. But Michael Olise, like we were talking about Mbappe,
so
like
good.
He's going to, they get Paraguay next, right?
Yeah.
Is that what they get? Like, yeah. I mean, so he's just going to keep, yeah. He's going to keep scoring. He's going to keep breaking records, just like Erling Haaland is doing, right? He's like the quickest to 60 international goals as they are able to beat Cote d'Ivoire, which is the first match of the day. But yeah, France, it was unbelievable that they were able to be held until the 45th minute. Right. And then the quality of the goals and the way that Olise reads the game and pulls the strings, you just marvel. You're just lucky to watch them in action.
Mexico also, sorry to cut you abruptly there, Dubs, but we're almost out of time here. Mexico, four straight clean sheets. That terrifies me. If England get past Congo, that match scares me as an England fan. It really does.
It should.
Listen, we're out of time. I always leave it too late to I always leave it too late to close things off.
Right.
And you got something you want to jump in quickly?
No. I thought that Mexico would be so difficult to beat with Azteca. So I know that is that where England will play if they win?
Well, let's be careful here because they're playing and we haven't had a chance to, by the time people listen to this on SiriusXM.
Oh, right.
England may have been stunned by now.
That's right. Can I tell one quick story? It's very, very quick. I asked son yesterday because I was doing work and I said, can you tell me the games for tomorrow? Because part of One Soccer, I had to preview these matches. And I was like, who's England playing again? And he said, Dr. Congo? What's that country?
That is funny. And a great way to end today's show. Everyone, thank you so much for this. As I mentioned there, we are footyprime.com. Check it out. Our store is open again. And there's a great new product. It's a brilliant Alfonso Davis decoy shirt. Alfonso Decoy, we call it, until it gets taken down for copyright issues. But I don't think it will. I think we're good. But you never know with FIFA, let's be honest here. Make sure you follow us, like us. We have a Patreon as well. Please jump onto that. And we'll be back tomorrow, which is going to be Thursday, right? So it's match day minus two tomorrow. More Canada talk. Craig and Jimmy should be back. So until then, cheers very much for listening, everyone. Bye-bye.
That MGM, make it legendary.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at @footyprimeig and on Twitter at @footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Ew.
Beautiful. That's good.